Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the second edition of Irish Illustrated ISO. I'm Tim Priester from Irish Illustrated. And for those that didn't see our first venture, this is something new, trying to pick a topic and elaborate upon it and give you some, maybe some background, some insight, some of the personal stuff that myself or Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated or John Bryce or Tom Zwiller and Drew Mentok and the crew that we experience along the way covering Notre Dame football. And it occurred to me this week that it's been 3 weeks since Notre Dame played for the national title, actually 3 weeks and one day as of today, Tuesday, since Notre Dame played for the national title against Ohio State. It seems longer than that. So it was 22 days ago that Notre Dame played Ohio State, 33 days ago they played Penn State, and 43 years ago that we were in New Orleans after the tragedy. We'll talk about that when Notre Dame played Georgia. And what occurred to me was that things happen so quickly once the season's over, and especially in this day and age, because Al Golden, Notre Dame's defensive coordinator, was quickly gone. Shortly thereafter, Chad Bowden, Notre Dame's general manager, was off to USC. Of course, Golden went to the NFL and the Bengals. And then running backs coach Dylan McCullough has gone back to the NFL, which we expected for a while. And quite frankly, him being around for 3 years was probably about the max, or apparently it was the max because he did leave. But I don't think that we expected him to be around more than 2 or 3 years. And then mixed in there was Notre Dame's pursuit of a general manager, which is ongoing. James Blanchard from Texas Tech decided to stay at Texas Tech. So my point being that it seems like we talked about Notre Dame playing in the national championship and their national championship run in a heartbeat, and it was over. And I just felt like today would be a good time to kind of re-wrap up the playoffs and what that experience was like, our experiences in the media covering this, maybe some stories along the way that didn't come out in podcasts, although we generally talk about pretty much everything that comes up. But, you know, when you look back at Notre Dame's playoff run, obviously it was magnificent. Four playoff games, winning at home against Indiana in pretty easy fashion, even though the score was tightened up. And you guys know, of course, Georgia, Penn State, and Ohio State. And I'll go over those. But this occurred to me, when we were waiting for the shuttle bus to go to the stadium for the Orange Bowl, there were some younger sports writers, and I clearly was the oldest one there. And we started talking about, you know, past experiences, and I started adding things up. And now that Notre Dame played, quote, four bowl games, I realize that they're not all referred to that, but through the years it always was four post regular season games, which Notre Dame really started going to in earnest right at the beginning of the 69 season, 1970. So there have been 46, quote, bowl games. I've gone to 38 of them, which is pretty astonishing. No, I was not at the Rose Bowl when Newt Rockne took the Four Horsemen to play Stanford, but every other one I could have gone to. I've been to 38 of 46. Two of those were as a kid, when Notre Dame ended Texas's 30-game winning streak, the 1970 season, and then the blowout loss in 72 in the Orange Bowl to Nebraska when Johnny Rogers, the Heisman Trophy winner, ran all over Notre Dame. So I've been to most of these, and there's been a lot of great experiences. Obviously, Notre Dame went through a drought there that it's amazing to realize that Notre Dame had not won a major bowl in 31 years, and then they beat number 9 Indiana, number 2 Georgia, number 4 Penn State, and played Ohio State for the national championship. So that in and of itself makes this the greatest season in Notre Dame football since 1988, when they won the national title against West Virginia in Fiesta Bowl. So anyway, kind of recapping some of these games, you know, as the games went on, we constantly, those that follow our Irish Illustrated Insider podcast would hear us say bridge too far. We said it too many times because Notre Dame's injuries had piled up. The bridge too far ended up being Ohio State, and we'll talk about the Ohio State game. But as Notre Dame went through the playoffs, you saw the dwindling of the stats. Notre Dame never reached 400 yards total offense in any of the four playoff games, and a running game went from 193 against Indiana, 98 of which was Jeremiah Love, and then 154 against Georgia, which Darian Price coming through big, and of course Riley Leonard. And then it dipped down to 117 against Penn State. Fortunately, the ground game picked up in the second half, and then just 53 against Ohio State. But Notre Dame played good football. I mean, they held Indiana and Georgia to 125 yards combined on 56 carries, and that bridge too far started to come defensively when Notre Dame played Penn State and Ohio State, because they were just too depleted along the defensive line to hold up. Fortunately, they played stout in the second half against Penn State after Catron Allen and Nick Singleton ran all over them in the first half, and then Notre Dame held that duo to 46 yards in the second half. We expected Trevion Henderson to have a bigger game against Notre Dame, but Quinshon Judkins did for Ohio State, and the difference maker, of course, was Will Howard running the football from the quarterback position, which was just a little bit too much offense for Notre Dame. Well, going back to that Indiana game, you know, there was a lot of talk about Kurt Cignetti. He put his name on the map nationally in FBS football with what he did with the Indiana Hoosiers. Defensive coordinator Brian Haynes did a tremendous job and really gave Notre Dame trouble outside of that 98-yard run by Jeremiah Love. Notre Dame only had they ended up with 198 yards besides the 95 yards besides the long run by Jeremiah Love. So, you know, but Notre Dame took the 27-3 lead. It went just the way you had hoped it would. They limited Curtis Rourke, really reduced his game, and he did all his damage late. Notre Dame was up 27-3 in that game, and Indiana scored two touchdowns in the last 5 minutes. But IU had 126 of their 278 yards in the last 5 minutes of the game. So, you know, I think some of the things that came out of that game, you know, Kurt Cignetti, a very brash coach, very, very confident in his abilities, very proud of his accomplishments as a coach, particularly in his first year at Indiana. But it was interesting that Freeman and his coaching staff got the best of Kurt Cignetti. I think that Cignetti coached that game very tentatively. There was an opportunity late in the game where they were chasing double-digit points, and he decided to punt instead of going for it. And so, you know, that was a case where Notre Dame was too good for them, and I also think on the field they were too good for them, and I also think that Marcus Freeman and his staff did a tremendous job of out-coaching Kurt Cignetti and his staff, except for in the second half when Notre Dame could move the football against Bryant Haynes's defense. But when the season started, we were asked, you know, what would you consider to be a successful season? I said that they would have to win two playoff games, because the expectation, when you looked at the schedule, of course, nobody expected a loss in Northern Illinois, but when you looked at the schedule, you thought this is 11-1, a potentially 12-0 team during the regular season. And because of that, I was assuming, we were as a group, Irish Illustrated was assuming that Notre Dame would make the playoffs, get a first round bye, play somebody at home they should beat. And so that's why I felt like they had to win two games in order for this to be two playoff games in order for this to be considered a successful season. Didn't, however, expect the second game to be against Georgia. And make no mistake, Georgia was not the typical Georgia from the previous 3 years, really. You know, they had to go with Gunnar Stockton, their backup quarterback, another huge advantage for Notre Dame with Carson Beck being injured. But we knew that Georgia's offensive line wasn't very good. They had really struggled running the football all season. And so, you know, when I looked, getting ahead of the Penn State game, when I looked at this game, I felt better about Notre Dame beating Georgia than I did Penn State. I thought Penn State was a better football team, and as it turned out, they were indeed. They were certainly on the verge of taking full control of the game against Notre Dame before halftime. We'll get into that a little bit. But you can't tell the story against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl without talking about what happened on, I guess, January 1 at 3:15 in the morning. When a crazed man decided to drive his truck down to Bourbon Street. Had he done that, I was on Bourbon Street 4 hours earlier, had been through Bourbon Street multiple times on that day. Had he chosen to do that a little bit earlier in the night, a lot more people would have been injured because it was jam-packed. Phil Houck, who I do a radio show with out of Fort Wayne, We've been doing that for more than a quarter of a century. We were together on Bourbon Street earlier in the night, and it was a great atmosphere. And so at 6 a.m., I receive a text, and the text says, "Heard about the horrible news. Are you okay?" I had no idea what that meant. And so I quickly called this person and quickly found out that what had actually happened. And, you know, as the morning went on, you think, okay, like you don't even realize the magnitude of it at that point until they start talking about terrorists, which was not a part of the equation early on. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, you don't really know the full magnitude of this, and you still think a football game is going to be played. But as the day went on, you knew that there was no way that that was going to happen. And so, and then they finally announced it. So Tim O'Malley and I had to get together and do an instant analysis. We were planning, of course, before the game to do an instant analysis, but there would be no game. So we gathered in a ballroom where we had met with the players, actually the entire team and the entire coaching staff, 2 days before kickoff. And we shot a video. And when I look back on it, I was in the lead that day, and I watched how I dealt with it. And I felt like I was too glib with it. And part of the reason was because I understood the audience that we would be addressing that day. And it was Notre Dame fans waking up to the same reality that, you mean they're not going to play the game today? So I felt like I was a little glib in delivering it, because I had in mind that Notre Dame fans would be disappointed, you know, by the fact that there would not be a game that day. But that you had to be on site to get a full appreciation of it, because the magnitude of what had happened. And the media hotel was two blocks away from where it occurred. You could literally walk out the front door of the hotel and turn your head to the left, and you could see where it had all begun. So, you know, we did that video. And as I said, I mean, I felt better about the Georgia matchup than Notre Dame, but we didn't know when it was going to be played. It all happened in fairly short order. You did realize, and then they announced it that the game would be delayed until tomorrow. The game was it was kind of madness when the game started. If you recall, Notre Dame was offside, or I'm sorry, roughed the punter a couple times, and you also realized pretty quickly that Notre Dame was getting the best of Georgia, even when they were being called for roughing the punter and running into the kicker, because Kirby Smart decided after the second one, we're not even going to decline it. We don't want to risk having another punt blocked, or like Notre Dame had done all season. And so as the game progressed, you know, we all remember that Notre Dame benefited from a RJ Oben forced fumble. Notre Dame quickly scored, and then to start the second half, the incredible Jaden Harrison 98-yard kickoff return. And by the end of the game, you realize again that Marcus Freeman had outcoached the opposing coaching staff. But this was Kirby Smart and Georgia. And that is, it's no small feat to be able to deal with that. I mentioned that 2 days before the game, we got together, the entire Notre Dame team gathered together for interviews, the entire Georgia team gathered together. And I didn't, you know, I popped around. We talked to Tyler Buckner. Those are subscribers. You read that story that I did with Tyler Buckner. Didn't ask any questions of Georgia, but just kind of wandered around to see the size of the Georgia linemen. And there was no doubt that Notre Dame was up against it from a size standpoint. It wasn't quite as striking as when we were on the field before the national championship game against Alabama in 2012. But you still saw that difference. But Freeman and his coaching staff outcoached Kirby Smart and his coaching staff. Marty Biagi, he got in Kirby Smart's head right at the outset of the game. And so Notre Dame deserved to win that game. And the incredible thing about that was, when you look at that, the job that Notre Dame did in the transfer portal last year, in that game alone, you think about the transfers that played a significant role. Of course, Riley Leonard leading the way offensively. RJ Oben, who struggled all year, the transfer from Duke, the forced fumble, Jaden Harrison's kick return, the transfer from Marshall. Bo Collins scores the touchdown right after the fumble forced by RJ Oben. Collins from Clemson, Mitch Jeter getting his mojo back. after really struggling with an injury the second half of the season. He came from South Carolina, and Rod Hurd, the second safety from Northwestern, had made a big play. I think it was a fourth down play on the goal line. And so, you know, that's where you had a great appreciation for what Notre Dame had done in the portal. And they deserved to win. They were the better football team, to be able to hold Georgia to 10 points, even though, again, this wasn't a Bulldog team that matched up to the ones in previous years. But here we were in New Orleans, and finally Notre Dame had played the game, the Sugar Bowl, and they had won. And now they were advancing to the Orange Bowl to play Penn State. As I said, I thought Penn State was a greater threat than Georgia, and that proved to be true. But one area that I did think that they could take advantage of was the interior defensive line of Penn State. They were deep, they had players, but I didn't see anybody that really, really stood out to me. And in the first half, I started to realize that I was wrong about that. However, I think it had a considerable amount to do with Abdul Carter, their great defensive end, of course, came into this game banged up, but he had a lot to do with, even when Notre Dame was trying to run between the tackles, because he was still active. If he wasn't coming off the edge, he was helping with the interior defensive line. And Penn State's interior defensive line played a lot better than Notre Dame's did that day, at least in the first half. In the second half, it was a great adjustment by Marcus Freeman and Mike Denbrock on offense, because they did some things. And again, if you were following on Irish Illustrated, we talked about this extensively in the tail of the tape a couple of days after the game, that they started really accounting for Abdul Carter. And, you know, they did it with an offensive guard helping out when he had to. At that point, it was Charles Jagusa, who was in for an injured Rocco Spindler. They did things with their tight end to account for him, and Notre Dame just started loosening things up. But at halftime, I write the snap judgments if you get Irish Illustrated, and you try to get ahead at halftime. And at that point, it looked like Notre Dame wasn't going to be able to win this game. And the lead to the story I wrote was bigger, stronger, faster, fresher. And that's exactly the way it looked in the first half until Steve Angeli came in. And let's face it, does Notre Dame follow through and win that game in the second half if Steve Angeli doesn't breathe some life into the offense at the end of the first half? I'm not really sure, but he did a great job, completed 6 of 7 for 44 yards, just kept moving the chains. Notre Dame ended up benefiting from the return of Riley Leonard in the second half. But when you went into halftime, you didn't know whether he was going to be back or not. So, and then fortunes changed. L. Golden, actually, Andy Kolonicki, the offensive coordinator for Penn State, was able to string together two long drives in the second half to kind of offset Notre Dame's response to struggling in the first half. But then, Riley Leonard came back in the great house, and you know the rest. But they shut down. The one thing that Notre Dame did do in the second half, after giving up 141 yards rushing in the first half to the two running backs, Singleton and Catron Ellen, held them to 46 yards in the second half. And that was magical. You know, I've been to a lot of bowl games, but the opportunity to be on the field after winning this game and the confetti's flying and Notre Dame's going to the national championship, and it's pretty hard to believe that it's happened. After the game, it was a late night, late night. And I can remember working till 3 a.m. We were shooting a video, of course. We were doing our Irish Illustrated overtime, and slept 3 hours and got up. And I wrote a column. It's called The Point After on Irish Illustrated. And I wrote about the culture and some of the things I mentioned that day. Part of the start of my column was with Trent Miles. Trent Miles coached for Tyrone Willingham at Notre Dame, and had worked with Mike Denbrock. He had come back as an assistant, assistant to Mike Denbrock at Notre Dame. And I'd interviewed him in the summer, and I led my column after the Penn State game with him talking about his love for Notre Dame and coming back to help Notre Dame win a national title. And as I went further into that piece that I wrote, I quoted Riley Leonard after the Penn State game, and he said the biggest thing, he was asked, what's the biggest thing that the country has learned about Notre Dame? And Riley Leonard said the biggest thing they learned is that culture wins and that this is a special place for a reason. And Marcus Freeman had some great things to say after that game. He said, you know, you have to, in order to, you have to be selfless in order to achieve anything great. And these players put Notre Dame in front of themselves. And to me, that was the story of the season after Northern Illinois, because Notre Dame won 13 straight games. And as Marcus Freeman said in his in talking to his team before the Ohio State game, you know, every game had been a playoff game. All they had to do was win one more. And that proved to be a bridge too far. National championship in Atlanta. I didn't mention the 30 hours it took to get home from Fort Lauderdale. That was a nightmare. That's for another time. But, you know, I didn't like Notre Dame's chances against Ohio State. And the main reason was that Ohio State's defensive line was absolutely outstanding, and they had depth. And I didn't like the matchup against Notre Dame, especially with Anthony Knapp out of the lineup. He had been injured in the Penn State game. And this was when Notre Dame was now on their third different offensive line of the season. And going up against the Ohio State defensive line was that bridge too far for Notre Dame. I know O'Malley and I caught some grief because we picked against Notre Dame. I don't know why we would make predictions if we were going to pick every time Notre Dame played a game. To me, that's silly and childish. And we both picked against Notre Dame. And we were correct. But you know what? Notre Dame did exactly what Indiana did against Notre Dame. They kept fighting. Indiana had a great season, and they didn't give up the ship until the very end and scored two touchdowns late. And Notre Dame did everything they could to get back in it. If they hold on 3rd and 8 on the deep ball to Jeremiah Smith, maybe they get one more shot at it. And that would have been pretty cool to have an opportunity to score a third touchdown in the second half and get that 2-point conversion. The post-game locker room, there was much made of that. Well, actually, before I get that, the part of the post-game was Marcus Freeman and Riley Leonard, and Jack Kaiser came in. And Jack Kaiser, I'm sure a lot of you people have seen the video of it. Jack Kaiser was extremely emotional after the game. He had just finished his 6th year at Notre Dame. He had played 70 games in a Notre Dame uniform. And I remember when Notre Dame was recruiting him, and Clark Lee was the defensive coordinator, and he was adamant about bringing in Jack Kaiser. And I remember watching his film at the time. And for those of you that know about Jack Kaiser, he came from a very small town in Indiana. He played single-A football in Indiana. And Indiana is a hotbed for basketball, but not for football. I think that's changed a little bit, but certainly not known for their high school football. And I thought, why is Clark Lee insisting on this guy, Jack Kaiser? He's a little undersized. The competition that he's played against hasn't been very good. It's been small-time football. Well, that's why Clark Lee is where Clark Lee is and why he's a head coach today, because he knew. He sensed and he knew Jack Kaiser and the kind of kid that he was coming into Notre Dame. And I just want to say how much respect that I have for him and the way, as a Notre Dame person, a Notre Dame graduate and a former athlete at Notre Dame, when I see somebody represent Notre Dame well in a football uniform, I'm impressed by that and have a great appreciation for that. And I have a great appreciation for Jack Kaiser. Now, what I was going to start to say was the post-game locker room, which we weren't in. O'Malley and I were, it's kind of split up. They opened the locker rooms for postseason games, and we went where Freeman was and where Kaiser was and Leonard. So we missed a commotion. I wasn't there, so I'm not going to act like I understand exactly what happened. But the deal is with postseason games, every school has to open the locker room to everybody, and you're entitled to speak to anybody and everybody that you want to. And a couple of the Notre Dame players, obviously crushed by the fact that they had not been able to follow through and win that 14th game in a row and win the national title, took exception to it. Should Notre Dame have been better prepared for that? Yes, they would, but emotions spilled out. Again, I didn't witness it. There were some accusations made by a national reporter. And Notre Dame, frankly, if they're going to go back into that situation again anytime soon, they need to prepare their players better for that. But you can certainly understand why the players would be emotional and maybe not like a question or two, but they didn't handle that. They didn't handle that as well as they should have. And frankly, in the game, Chip Kelly outcoached Al Golden. The reason he outcoached him was because he had just too much offense for Notre Dame to stop. So it fell one game short. The bridge too far included an unhealthy Jeremiah Love, who only had four carries in the game, I think he would say that he should have got more touches, but nor the coaching staff did not feel necessarily like he was going to be able to be effective considering what he had been dealing with his knee injury. So I just wanted to take one more opportunity to say what a magnificent season this was for Notre Dame. I appreciate the journey along the way. It was a long year. I know a lot of you saw the Here Come the Irish series that Peacock did, and they were kind enough to ask me to be a part of it and to interview with them three times, once before the season, once after the Louisville game when we kind of talked about more Northern Illinois and bouncing back from that, and then prior to the national championship game. And one of the questions that they asked me was, if you could use one word to describe this football season for Notre Dame, what would it be? And that they didn't use it, so nobody ever saw that. But my one word was magical, because who loses to Northern Illinois in game two and then wins 13 straight games when you haven't won a bowl game, a major bowl game in 31 years, and you beat number 9, number 2, and number 4 to get to the national championship game? It was a magical season for Notre Dame. If I were to say it all over again, what would that word be? And I think it would be relentless, because that's what Notre Dame football was this year, or last year, 2024. They were absolutely relentless in their goal to win the national championship. And what kind of coaching staff do you have when your team loses to Northern Illinois in game two, and they buy into everything that you say moving forward, and just keep beating opponent after opponent after opponent? And whether or not it was a great schedule or not is not the issue, because not only was Notre Dame winning, but they were hammering teams along the way. So I just wanted to kind of give one last tribute to this season and this football team and the Notre Dame football players and coaches that represented our alma mater as well as it did, to the guys that stepped forward, the Riley Leonards, Jeremiah Love, absolutely tremendous, Gabe Rubio stepping in, the injuries along the defensive line, the way that Drake Bowen grew, the leadership of Jack Kaiser, the greatness of Xavier Watts, the incredible freshman performance by Leonard Moore, the great performance throughout the year by Christian Gray. Unfortunately, his 2024 season will be remembered by some misplays against USC at the end of the regular season, and then the deep ball to Jeremiah Smith against Ohio State. But what a great season he had as well. Jaden Greathouse emerging late, Jordan Faison emerging late, the three different offensive lines that I talked about. I think Notre Dame fans, now that we've moved on to 2025 and all the changes and we're on to the next season, but I hope that Notre Dame fans take a moment once again to embrace what this season did and recognize that, this program needs to continue to improve. They've got a lot of great leadership that needs to be replaced. But when it was all said and done, the culture that Marcus Freeman created in the buy-in from the players was absolutely magnificent. I just wanted to say one last salute, Notre Dame football 2024.